Sia never actually lived. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Gold Mary in the bag, tied around my handy for my protection. I'm walking around, big old sack on my back, coming in your direction. What kind of tea do you like? I got it. I'm the medicine man, herb from the land. I'm the herb man, come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man, you all come see me. Hey, rosemary, calm your nerves, got peppermint leaf to get rid of my fever. I keep periwinkle to get some love now. Whoa, I got hug me clothes to make my backbone strong. Gold cola tonic for my blood, dandelion for my bones, y'all. I can leave. Keep away flies. Hot Lady Cayenne for my pressure. Oh, I'm the herb man. Come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man. You all come see me. Get the children out of the way now. No, you can't smoke this, sir. This is for salad. Yes, yeah, salad. Herb man.
And good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of To Your Health. To Your Health is a program designed not only to inform, but to also turn your life and health around. I am Dr. Theodore Watkins, the host of To Your Health, and I'm here with my able, trusty assistant, Mr. Frank Smith. How you doing, Brother Frank?
I'm extremely excited, Doc. Thank you so much for asking. How about you?
Man, Lord is good to me, brother.
Yes,
I'm out in my yard working on my flowers, so you know I'm a happy camper, man.
That's it.
Yes, sir, indeed. You know, we've been talking about this dream that I have for our community as being the healthiest community in this country, yeah, if not the world. And to that end, we've been discussing various components that is necessary to accomplish that. You know, we've looked at exercise and nutrition, and we talked about how to, the last few weeks, how to prepare recipes and, you know, properly season those foods, you know. But now, since food and nutrition has been found to be the number one cause of death in this country, food and nutrition, or the lack thereof, has been determined to be the number one cause of death in this country, replacing cigarette smoking. We need a trusty source of that food. All right? And, you know, I, as a little boy, I remember hearing God blesses the child that has his own. And so we are excited that we have our own. And Frank, I want you to introduce our guest that's going to help us to be what I believe is that valuable link to help us to accomplish this dream.
I sure will, Doc. We have Michelle Tingling, and we have Marcus Robinson, Robertson, and Monica Newman. I'll start with Ms. Tingling, lifelong activist and community leader advancing social and racial and intergenerational justice. She's a prominent voice in Gray Panthers of Washington, D.C., advocating for equity and dignity in aging, which I am. Decades of grassroots organizing, shaping policies on employment, education, and family, pillars of progressive change in DC, inspiring generations to action, continues the mission to build just society and amplifying overlooked voices. Mr. Robinson, He champions soil health, sustainability, and empowering people through farming. He's a Bronx native, former Army logistician. Now he's in his eighth season of certified naturally grown farmer. He's a hemp grower and a beginner's trainer. He launched Good Earth Therapy to help small farmers with marketing, sales, and resources. He's building market space to connect cultivators, healers, and protectors of the earth. Monica Newman, last but not least, Program Director for Future Harvest Agricultural Leadership Development Initiative. Say that two or three times. Serves the DMV and multiple direct support efforts in community with others. And Ms. Newman completed Arcadia's Veteran Farmer Training Program. Doc, we got a bunch here, a powerful bunch.
You know, we thought about various topics for the program today, and we ended up with eat smart, choose fresh. Eat smart, choose fresh. Now, Brother Marcus,
Yes, sir.
first of all, welcome to each of you. How can you assist us in eating smart and choosing fresh?
My involvement with the Gray Panthers and in this event that we are going to be talking about today, and your larger effort, Dr. Watkins, is around what is grown locally and seasonally by Black farmers right here in the DMV. Part of that education process includes an awareness of what is a CSA. I don't know how many folks know what a CSA is, but a CSA is something identified as community supported agriculture. It allows individuals who are interested in purchasing their produce, fruits, and vegetables early to link up with the local farm and say, "Hey, I'd like to buy a CSA share." And that farmer then takes that those folks' money, purchases the seeds and everything that they need. They account at that time for what it is, not only that they're going to grow, but how much time it's going to take to grow it, when it will be available, and then for the duration of the season, provide that CSA share customer with fruits and vegetables for, again, the entirety of the season. The thing that some folks don't like about CSAs is that you can't necessarily get strawberries in February that were actually grown in soil. You can get them from some other methods of growing, but not necessarily those that were grown in soil. And the same thing applies to watermelons and some other things that folks really enjoy. And obviously, because of the climate here in the DMV, we don't have like orange groves. So sorry, we don't can't say we can put oranges in your CSA that were grown locally. But having said that, educating folks around what is a CSA and what is available locally and seasonally, having those be culturally appropriate for different communities, and all of those things that speak to our nutritional needs that are not being met by the current diet that we have, which is typically processed or just have so many types of additives, derivatives, and chemicals that they affect us adversely. So it's an education process, first and foremost, doctor. And I
So,
appreciate you getting that conversation started.
they say you're from the Bronx,
Yes, sir.
all right, and then you went to the Army.
Correct.
When did you feel a call to become a farmer?
As a single dad of a teenage girl, it was a way I hope to keep us close and maintain an open line of communication. It stuck with me, but it didn't necessarily stick with her. So,
Ha 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 ha.
I carry on, and she kind of watches from the sidelines.
So how long have you been into this farming?
I got started back in 2014 as a backyard gardener. In 2017, I transitioned into a training program with the Arcadia Center for Sustainable Food and Agriculture. And in 2018—
So who is the Arcadia Center?
Arcadia Center for Sustainable Food and Agriculture is a DC-based, Virginia-located farm and an educational space.
Okay.
Some folks may have seen their mobile markets in and around DC, where they sell fresh produce that has been grown at Arcadia here in Alexandria, Virginia. But they also do a veteran farmers training program, as well as a few other offerings that Monica and I were able to take advantage of in our transition from backyard growers to farmers.
So Monica, how did you become a farmer?
So I became a farmer right during COVID. So I asked myself, like, what did our ancestors do? Because there's no way they had McDonald's back then and were being told they can't ride off the McDonald's. And that kind of, not kind of, but it did. It took me on a trip to figuring out who my ancestors were, where did they live, what did they do? And I, in my research, I discovered that the vast majority of them were farmers and they owned land. So immediately I said I needed to find specifically Black farmers because I wanted to know what that correlation looked like. What did, you know, how did they grow? Once upon a time, my great grandmother could have went out in the backyard foraging. If I said I had a stomach ache, she could have found everything necessary instead of me having to go to, you know, CVS. But again, it's COVID, so you can't go anywhere. So how did we sustain ourselves? COVID is what I heard that made me say I need to figure out how to grow my own food, how to grow my own herbs and vegetables.
So there were some benefits to COVID, huh?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Folks indeed. who heard the call, it's like, man, we finding our tribe. Calamity and chaos is honestly the best way for us to thrive sometimes.
Yeah, and you talk about you know, our heritage, you know, our ancestors. You know, I know I got into gardening and so forth because of my mama. And I remember one time I was taking this botany course in summer school, you know, and so we were studying these trees, right? I understood all of the physiology and so forth, but I just couldn't get the name of all those trees. And so I went to my grandmother. I said, "Grandma, teach me trees." Now this is in the projects, all right? She took me out into the yard of the projects and started teaching me all these different trees and how I could recognize one tree as opposed to another tree and the various components. I mean, we have a heritage. We may not know about it. I mean, I didn't know my grandmother knew about trees. I knew I didn't know, and I needed some help, you know? And so we can often go back, but what you are doing is going back to bring us forward. And I'm excited about that vision. You know, we've talked about in this dream that we have that we see ourselves growing. And it's something I've been interested in for years because, you know, God blesses the child that got his own.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and I read somewhere where Marcus, you just felt that you had to work for yourself, you know. I believe that's so important that we have the sustainability mm-hmm. within our community, And we have resources, you know, and obviously you have done some of the work to identify some of those resources so that I can get, my wife said, you know, let's go to mom, you know, I shouldn't say the name, but let's go to the store to buy some organic food. I said, I can't go. I can't go. I'm tired of spending my money for food that's probably organic, but has no taste. Mm-hmm. All right. That's hard. I gotta sit the bananas out for days because I'm not gonna eat any hard green bananas in my cereal, mm-hmm. you know. And so I said, no, I can't do that. I won't do that. And the beauty is that there's room for me to take advantage of what you all are doing. So this CSA, how long has it been in existence?
CSA has been around for hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years.
Yep, it's how communities supported each other.
And we've been involved with it for hundreds of years.
Absolutely. So we've just not been able to fully capitalize on it as a community. There are others who've used it as a business model to enrich themselves and their communities. But by and large, in current times, we have not done it or used it in a unified effort that would benefit us all. And I think that there is a strong chance that if we came together, learned a little bit about where our food comes from, and where it comes from is vitally important because it's soil-based. And when you start talking about soil, you're talking about land. And that's when a lot of aha moments kind of come to you, like, oh, okay, now I see why we've been separated from the land and why, you know, the idea and the stigma and the stereotypes have been implanted in our brains and in our onto our psyches, even, that working the land is I don't know, substandard. It makes you less than. But that's,
you know, at one point we used to own a lot of land.
That's correct.
You know, my dream was to have a practice in down south, and there was a group of us that was going to do it. And when I was at Tuskegee, I did a 3-month rotation at Tuskegee at the VA hospital there, and I connected with one of the guys I'd gone to boarding academy with. And I said, I need to know where I can get some land. And he introduced me to this guy in Montgomery, Alabama. And he actually started the local NAACP there. But now he was working to keep Black land in Black hands. Because mm-hmm. what was happening when the elders would die, all right, these people there were using the laws in Alabama to basically steal the land, because there was a law that you couldn't divide the land. You have to sell it and divide the cash, all right? Mm-hmm. So they would find somebody up north and say, you are part of this inheritance, and come down, and, you know. And so he was looking for Black people to buy land. And I found this 250 acres of land in Coosa County, Alabama. I mean, it was, I would just walk on the, I mean, it was mine, you know? And unfortunately, the dream didn't come true at that point. But my wife keeps asking me, baby, where would you want to live? I said, I want some land.
That's right.
I want some land. And that's what we have to do. And I'm excited that you all are doing that. And you're not only getting land, you're using land to produce food.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
For the now, community. Why should we, number one, want to eat this food that you all are growing?
If I could circle back real quick, Doc, to answer your question. It says that community-supported agriculture emerged in the late 1970s and early 80s with no single inventor or origin. However, the CSA concept also has roots in earlier initiatives, including those in the South and with Booker T. Watley at Tuskegee University.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Just to share that. But as far as why, the word organic is used a whole lot, but we who have re-entered this space as new and beginning farmers or returning farmers, as we reclaim the land, we are reclaiming what is simply natural growing practices.
All right.
Although there are a number of farms and farmers who aspire to achieving that organic label or status, there is a bit of an administrative burden. It's not insurmountable, but it does require a high level of attention to detail, some of which—
And finance.
And some financial, yes, indeed. But you put the two together, it's time and money. And that's not something that a lot of farmers have that coincide at the same time in all instances.
So what happened to the Black farmer?
Everything.
Debt.
From being dispossessed, from being, whether it was by hook or by crook, they separated us from the land. And as that stigma surrounding sharecropping or anything to do with the soil and toil of growing your food became this taboo sort of thing where you had family saying, oh no, baby, you're going to college. You're not going to be a farmer, right down to present day where folks just, they over romanticize what it is. Like farming is still work and it's still a business. It's not a pretty dream. It is work and it is dirt. It's bugs, it's all of those things. It's outside in the elements. And once folks see that or experience it, either the calling stays with them and they come back, or they're one time and they say, nah, it's not for me. And those are especially the folks that we're trying to reach, because we have such a wealth of brilliant people from within our community who all, let's face it, all have to eat and all have some type of skill that can contribute not only to our community, but also to the smaller agricultural community and Black agricultural community as well. We still need engineers, we need accountants, electricians, all of those things. Y'all eat too.
Lawyers.
Yes.
Doctors, it's interesting, you know. We need to know more about how to do it. You know, our church bought this land across the street, and one of the first things we did, we started these gardens, and I got me a plot, and I would get up early in the morning and drive. It was about 20 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
I work on my garden for an hour or two, come back, take me a shower, go to work.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I had a whole bunch of things, including watermelon, cantaloupe, mm-hmm. and corn that I was growing. And I remember one morning I got up, drove out there. It's about time the watermelon to be ripe. and I found my watermelon had been invaded.
Yes.
By the brown hogs, man.
And they have this thing, they like to taste a little bit of every one.
And they took bites into every one of my watermelon and cantaloupe and just left them there.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to get me a gun and wait out for them. But I was talking to one of my friends, who he's a physical therapist, but he's also a farmer from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. He said, Ted, what you got to do is you got to go deep down into the ground and build your fence deep down into the ground and then up so they can't get around it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's knowledge out there.
Yeah.
If we would take advantage of it and not just quit, you know, you know, I was talking to one of my Bible study members last night, and she's in Texas, and she was saying how she'd been out in her garden, you know, growing some, planting some garlic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I said, doesn't garlic help to keep away some of the pest? And she said, yeah. Mm-hmm. It does. And so mm-hmm. there are things that you can do.
That's correct.
If you have correct. Knowledge. And you say that you all are into training. So you're going to give us knowledge so we can be successful. But in the meantime, we can even purchase for some folk who are already doing it. Is that what you're telling us?
That's correct. As part of our training processes is in building out our interns, our apprentices, we are promoting stewardship, not ownership, because we're working in collaboration with nature, not against it. Hence, natural growing practices. No pesticides, no herbicides, fungicides. There are some folks who, as you alluded to earlier, will resort to homicide, but by and large, we try and do no harm.
But it turns out it's against the law to it's against the law to kill them groundhogs, man. I tell you, but it's also against the law to kill bats.
Yes,
you know, and when my house was invaded for the second time with bats. You know, I found out that every day they eat their body's weight of mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some things that we just don't know, about the creatures that we want to blow away, you know. And so I need to know, what does the gray, was the Gray Panthers?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. The Gray Panthers of Metropolitan Washington.
Yeah, how do they fit in with this farming stuff?
Gray Panthers asked a question several years ago, why is there hunger? There was a conference and I became involved with them as a beginning farmer because I had the same questions. I was naive about why is there hunger. There's hunger because folks can't afford good food. There's hunger because folks are getting this nutritionally deficient food that just makes them more hungry, that makes them dependent on, or how could I say, addicted to sugar or salt or to this or to that. And I just followed through and followed up with the Gray Panthers before, during, and after that conference, and have remained with them since. That said, if I may, Doc, for over 5 decades, the Gray Panthers of Metropolitan Washington have moved with purpose, lifting voices, building bridges, and honoring the power of women leading across generations. We're hoping that folks will join us for Her Story in Bloom. It's a leadership gathering honoring women's growth and legacy. It's going to be Sunday, April 7th, 27th, pardon me, at the Josephine Butler Park Center in D.C. It's more than a celebration. It's a movement to spark civic change and nurture cross-generational power. You can reserve your seat today at greatpanthersdc.org. Her story in Bloom is cultivating a good life in a just world. So how does Great Panthers fit in? They've always fit in and have been active around what plagues us. What are some of the things that hamper and cripple us as a community and as a society? And they've been at it for a number of years, and we're here to support them in their tagline, Age and Youth in Action, where we can get some of the more of the youth in there.
So Michelle, how did this, unmute yourself, how did this, her story in Bloom, how did that come about?
Well, actually, Marcus and I were talking with some of the younger people who have been, he'd been working with or around, in part in the farming community, but also just in reaching out, and he'd worked with a number of people. So we started working with some of the younger people and talking to them about Great Panthers, and we started talking about, you know, needing to help to promote it, need to have a fundraiser, need to have an event where we can bring people together. And we realized that the pandemic has really impacted many of us in ways that we really have not assessed and analyzed. Mm. You know, and because I have a bunch of children and grandchildren, I keep getting reminded on a regular basis of how many of them started school, you know, during the pandemic and never had an in-time classroom. But there are so many things happening that we as Great Panthers really needed to be involved with, that we've been involved with over the years. You know, we were involved with starting rent control in the District of Columbia. We were involved in the area of housing. We were involved with starting Justice with Janitors. We were involved in almost every aspect of civic life you can look at that affected human beings. And one of the things I wanted to go back to that hunger conference where Marcus really got engaged is that our answer to why is the wealthiest country in the world have people having to dig in trash cans looking for edible food? Because that happens on a regular basis. Well, part of it is that they can't afford it, but the big reason they can't afford it is because we live in a society of public production and private expropriation. So hunger is a money-making business, and you don't make money by giving people food that they can't afford. You make money by charging everything you can through the nose and making sure that nobody gets food unless they find a way to pay for it. And that's what our struggle is right now.
And when they get the food is inadequate.
If you look at the history of food in this country, and they used to have a bunch of documentaries on a couple of years back, it may have been during the pandemic, but I remember watching a documentary on the history of food, on the history of fast food, on the history of frozen food, on the history of supermarkets. And what I learned is that the country didn't, you know, people, they didn't, they, once they separated the farming, the food and consumption from growing food, you know, the people who were busy selling the food didn't necessarily care about the impact on the people who had to eat it.
That's right.
That wasn't their problem. Their problem.
You froze on us. What?
Got involved. He had been in the military, and in San Juan Hill, they had just started sending their canned food to the military, and that food was more often than not rotten, because they didn't have the rules that said you had to make sure that it was edible, that it wasn't spoiled, that it wasn't rotten. So they didn't. So they haven't done any more than we have demanded that they do. So I think that the activity of being closer to the growing of food is, it takes us back to where we were. It's kind of a Sankofa moment. You know, my mother used to tell stories about how after her father died and her grandmother came to stay with them, they used to harvest beans and go and sell them. And every so often the kids would say, "Grandma, we want some meat." So she said, "Well, okay, well, you help me sell all these beans and I'll get you a small piece of meat." And they used to get a small piece of meat and add it to the beans, and that would make them happy. So, you know, I mean, like, we have learned a lot of things about food. And we have also been miseducated around food like we have in every other aspect of our lives by a system that only sees us as workers that only sees us as producing for them, not for us. So I think that the role that you're talking about and what Marcus and the people that he continues to bring to the table that he's working with, you know, kind of really speak to that question. It's like, how do we control?
He got with a bunch of gray-haired rebels.
Hey, don't let that gray hair fool you.
That's right.
All right now. All right.
And I
think that, so anyway, they were the ones that kind of came up with the idea of the Tea Party. And then we looked at it and thought about it and said, you know what? We have used every other kind of gathering in our lives to organize, to educate, to help train our folks to move beyond where we are right now. Because the truth is that the reason we have to look at the fact that we were kidnapped and dragged overseas and brought here as chattel. And as my great aunt used to say, they didn't go to Africa to find any slaves. They went to Africa to find agricultural specialists and agronomists and astronomers and medical practitioners. No, they didn't go and just find a bunch of people who didn't know anything. They went and kidnapped people who were the direct descendants of the people who started civilization. Because the reality is that in America and in the world, everybody is African because that's from whom they are descended, because we were the first people on earth. And we are still here. And everybody else is a derivation of us. So we have nothing to be ashamed of. But my husband, because my name is actually Tingling Clemens, was an adult educator. And I've worked with him and some of his students. And he said, the hardest thing was to convince my students that they could learn. He said, I spent the first 2 weeks, at least, of every semester convincing them that they weren't there by mistake, that the only reason that they hadn't learned to read and write is because they hadn't been given the opportunity. So I think that, you know, every aspect that we have identified where we choose to place our time and talent, our work, wealth, and wisdom is an area of work that we're engaged in to help make this a better world, to help make our community stronger, and to help make sure that our children have better lives than we have.
So this program, Her Story in Bloom, how is it going to promote the farming, the CSAs and so forth?
Well, we're going to have two series of panels, and we're going to have leaders in each of those panels who are going to help bring information in their areas of specialty. And among those people who are the leaders who are coming in, we have several farmers and agricultural specialists. And our real focus is going to be on, you know, this is actually National Black Women's History Month. Mm-hmm. And so we're celebrating the stamina and the legacy and the role that Black women have played in getting us where we are. And we're looking at not just this moment, but we're looking at where we were, where we are, and where we intend to be. And, you know, I think that we're talking about being the change that we want to see. Oftentimes you go to sessions and people want to talk about the problem and the problem and the problem.
Yeah.
We're fairly clear. I think all of us can give, like, you know, a dissertation on the problem from our viewpoint. But that's not what we're there to do. We don't need another identification of the problem. What we need is an analysis that tells us where it is, how it is we're going to move forward. You know,
the only reason you identify a problem is to come up with a solution.
That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And that is the purpose of learning. That is the purpose of the work that we do. That is the purpose of coalescing and working together to make the change that we know needs to be. We are the change we want to see. You know, like we often have said, we are the ones we've been waiting for. But we are definitely the ones. You know, there's no Messiah coming to us unless you're talking about the one you see in the mirror, if you change to look in it. You know, we're at a point, and I think that what's going on around us is a real indication that we can't count on what we've always known. We can't count on government to protect us and to help us. We've had to fight with government to agree that they had a right, that we had a right to ask for their protection. So we don't need somebody reminding us or explaining to us that the government is not always our friend. We are the ones who have made the change. That's why we've had mutual aid societies. CSAs, as far as I see it, were a part of mutual aid. And so that's not, that can't be a surprise. You know, I know that my grandparents had a farm. My great-grandparents had a farm. You know, my great-grandmother got caught going to learn how to read and write because she was sneaking through the garden, you know, to get out so she could go see the lady who was teaching them in Spartanburg. So I know that, you know, we have fought for everything that we have. And I think that the farming, let me step back a second. You know, we own so much more farmland than we do now. And I think that you asked earlier, Doc, like, you know, how is it that we're just coming back to it? Well, our land was stolen. It was manipulated the same way that we were exploited, the same way that they stuck in there that, you know, there's no slavery unless you're in jail. And then they're busy coming up with all kinds of laws and rules to put us in jail. You know, to me, that doesn't seem like an accident. But then I don't really believe that much in coincidences either.
So Monica, where do you see you fitting into this whole scheme of things? And what you're bringing to the table?
So for me, like Marcus said, I did the Arcadia Veteran Farmer Program. So I was someone who knew absolutely nothing about farming outside of what
you,
I...
Michelle has gray hair. Your hair is not gray. It's black or reddish. But it's not gray. So you're young. You're a youngster. We got both ends here.
Absolutely right, and that's the connection that we want to create. So for me, coming into this space is more so how much can I learn, not just for myself, but to share with the community. So we get together. Things like her story and her in Bloom, it's a networking opportunity to speak to older and the younger generation, because a lot of these opportunities for us to, like Marcus said, we need engineers, we need plumbers. Like, these things can directly translate to skills with farming. Learning how to, you know, be a plumber, you can do irrigation on the farm, set up farm irrigation. And that's water that we need to water our plots. So if we can speak with the older generation who still remembers their great-grandparents, who still remembers, like Quay mother just mentioned, her great-grandmother sneaking off to learn how to read, like, we are still directly connected to that. She can remember things that we don't. So if we're learning and teaching each other, A, how to farm, A, what is emotional intelligence? What does work-life harmony look like? How to balance these things and take that negative stigma of what farming or agriculture, to your point earlier, this is ancestral knowledge. We're just relearning all of the things that our family already knew. We were shooken up with these things by eating, you know, processed food. Statistically, you can look these things up and see how this processed food directly with ADHD, how all of these things tie into why, you know, you're not being able to learn or why you can't sit down. I wholeheartedly know for a fact and believe grounding yourself, putting your hands in the soil is therapeutic. It helps with mental health, getting fresh air. You're stuck behind a computer screen all day. So creating programming around teaching these things to help us learn, A, how to be a community, how can we network, how can we buy from one another? Because essentially, farmers are entrepreneurs.
I'm excited that you are reaching out to the younger generation and to the children. You know, my granddaughter, she's 4 years old. She loves to eat vegetables. You know, she needs to know how to grow them. You know. And I remember one of my classmates is from Grenada. His brother, who also is OB, both of them are OBGYNs, had just bought a house out in Potomac, you know. And so his brother, who is my classmate, had sent me some nutmeg from Grenada, you know. And so I went out to pick it up, and when I went, I said, "Show me around your place." He didn't take me to his swimming pool. He didn't take me to his tennis court. He didn't take me. He took me to his garden.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. That's the first place he took me. was to his garden. I said, this boy got this early on, you know? And even though he was out there with the Richies, he still had a garden and he was proud of it. We have to teach our young people the importance of that, because food is our medicine, and our medicine should be our food. Mm-hmm. You know, we just have a few minutes to go. I wanted to open up the phones, but I don't know that we have really time for that. But it's so exciting what you all are doing, and it really fits into the dream, because if we don't have quality food, good tasting food, you know, I was looking up, you know, organic versus inorganic on my computer today, you know, and it's amazing how they're confusing, they're murking the water to make conventional inorganic foods not so bad.
Yeah.
Yes, they're pesticides, but.
But it's not so bad.
They cause you to have cancer and ADHD, and you know, but that ain't so bad, you know. And so we need to be able to give a counter to the information that's being trained. So if I wanted to purchase food, do you have a mechanism where I could do that?
Absolutely. For starters, Good Earth Therapy, which is my business, is not a not-for-profit. It is a for-profit entity that supports community-based efforts, but acts as a social benefit enterprise.
All right.
That said, in collaboration with a local organization here, we have purchased several cold storage vehicles, one of which is a mobile farmers market that we will have a schedule up shortly, but you could typically find us at Old Maryland Farms for the foreseeable futures. And again, as we get a more established routine, we'll be sharing information about where we'll be at. But if you want to find out more about everything that we're doing and meet some of the folks behind what's happening, you can go to greatpanthersdc.org. Come on out to this little gathering that we're having. Sit down, break bread with us, and learn about who it is, what we're doing, and where we're going to be at next.
Now, once again, when is this
Sunday.
Her story in bloom going to be?
Sunday, April 27th at the Josephine Butler Park Center in Northwest DC.
Do you know the address of that?
Yes, it's 2437 15th Street, Northwest.
All right.
And how would people find out about this event? More details?
The details are at, we have a website, Herstory by Grey Panthers DC. That's Her Story, Herstory, by BY, Grey Panthers, GRAYPANTHERS.com.
All right. And so they could go, is there a phone number they can call for those who are not computer literate?
Yeah, they can call 202-391-3771. That's 202-391-3771.
Now, of course, when our young people grow up, they won't need the phone number. But right now, some of the folks that we want to get involved with the Grey Panthers, with this rebel group, that's revolutionizing, and I say that laughing, but we need a revolution.
Yes,
you know, because we're dying like flies, and we don't even know that we're dying. We're just laughing, you know. I give a lecture and say that, you know, I show this thing where they used to march and say and they would be singing Jody Got Your Girl and Gone when I was in the Army. And they would sing it because I didn't sing that. Because number one, Jody didn't have my girl, and if he did, I wouldn't be singing about it. But we need to develop a revolution where we are recognizing that there's need for change. And if we make change, we can be old and gray and still be healthy on no medications or on very few medications, you know. And food will become our medicine. I'm excited. We're gonna have to have you guys back again. If someone wanted more information on your organization, Marcus and Monica, how could they contact you?
You want to go ahead first, Monica?
Okay. You can find me on social media at Monica, M-O-N-I-C-A, Farm Life. And you can also email me, monica@futureharvest.org.
Future Harvest. All right now.
Future Harvest. That's good.
Projected into the future. All right, Marcus.
I can be reached at marcus@gooderf.com. That's marcus@gooderf.com. Although I am on social media, I'm not especially active. So make an interesting...
My Marcus is a little older, Monica. You know.
Yeah. Oh, I know that hopefully by putting out this message that somebody will say, hey, I can take care of your social media for you. So there's all sorts of opportunities within this agricultural space if you're paying attention. That's one of the great things about being present in this. Like you see an inch ahead, you see a year ahead, you see the future as well as the past. So that speaks to the Sankofa, looking forward and looking back.
Well, I'm very proud of what you all are doing. And we, you know, you found a friend here. As long as I'm on this station, you got a place to come. And because what you're doing is consistent with where my head is and where we're going. And I'm looking forward to us being able to work together to heal this community. You know, we don't have to be sick. To a great degree, illness is a choice. Yes, we have to die, but we don't have to die prematurely. And, you know, I'm excited about that and looking forward to us being able to work together, getting with this Rebel Michelle. You know, and we're going to fight to make some changes that are very needed. Brother Frank, are there some parting words that you have, my brother?
Yeah. Here's a quote by Henry Kissinger. Who controls the food supply controls the people. Who controls the energy can control whole continents.
Yes.
Who controls money can control the world. And guess what? That's what's happening.
trying to do it. But we have to start dreaming.
That's right.
Of a day when we are back in control again.
Yes.
And you know, I ain't gonna say too much more on that right now.
Thank you, the WPFW staff, including our engineers, the acting general manager, the program director, who's recuperating well, for sure. We want to thank the volunteers, programmers, and the loyal listeners. We also want to thank Joni Eisenberg for what she does in general, but for her tremendous shows today. They were good, both the extended and the regular. And we've just got a few more minutes. We want to thank Ola Dari Maccabee for your great musical contributions. Stay tuned to WPFW. Next up is Jazz and Justice Radio with Brother Kaba and the African Deep Thought Edition. After that, I think somebody's doing a version of To the East. Listen to next Monday. at 2 o'clock for another life-saving broadcast of your health. If you want to make an appointment with my doctor, Dr. Theodore Watkins, call 202-388-0992, Tuesdays through Thursdays, 10 to 5, or go to www.twiliving.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Watkins and Mr. Smith. We appreciate your support. WPFW, radio station listeners and supporters, thank y'all for your time and your attention.
All right.
For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Monday, April 21st. Here are some headlines. China issued a stern warning today to countries contemplating trade pacts with Washington that may come at Beijing's expense. In a statement, China's Commerce Secretary said, quote, China firmly opposes any party reaching a deal at the expense of China's interests. If this happens, China will never accept it and will resolutely take countermeasures in a reciprocal manner. Close quote. The statement comes after reports that President Trump is hoping to use tariff negotiations with other countries to isolate China. This month, he raised the base tariff on Chinese imports to 145%. China retaliated by raising its levies on U.S. goods to 125%. In other news, four House Democrats arrived in El Salvador today to investigate the conditions of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a Maryland man who was mistakenly deported to El Salvador by the Trump administration. Democrats have accused the Trump administration of blatantly overstepping its authority, both by deporting Abrego Garcia despite a 2019 no-removal order and by defying a Supreme Court order to facilitate his return. On arriving in El Salvador, Representatives Yasmin Ansari of Arizona, Maxine Dexter of Oregon, Maxwell Frost of Florida, and Robert Garcia of California issued this statement, quote, "While Donald Trump continues to defy the Supreme Court, Kilmar Abrego Garcia is being held illegally in El Salvador after being wrongfully deported. That is why we are here, to remind the American people that kidnapping immigrants and deporting them without due process is not how we do things in America." Close quote. In more news, the White House said today that President Trump stands strongly behind Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, following a report yesterday in the New York Times that Hegseth shared sensitive information about planned strikes in Yemen in a private Signal group chat that included his wife and brother. According to the Times, this happened on the same day Hegseth mistakenly sent similar sensitive details to a Signal chat that included the Atlantic editor-in-chief. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt told reporters today, quote, "The president absolutely has confidence in Secretary Hegseth. I spoke to him about it this morning, and he stands strongly behind him." Close quote. And Pope Francis, the first Latin American and Jesuit leader of the Roman Catholic Church, has died. He was 88. The Vatican today said that Pope Francis died of a cerebral stroke that put him into a coma and led to irreversible heart failure. For 12 years, he led more than 1 billion Catholics and often clashed with conservatives as he sought to make his church more inclusive and progressive on a wide range of issues. He put more women in senior Vatican roles than any previous pope, While not changing church doctrine on same-sex marriage, he allowed blessings for same-sex couples and approved the baptism of transgender believers. Pope Francis framed climate change as a scientific fact